I think I'm, yeah, I'm on. There we go. You guys can hear me okay? Yep. Good morning. How are you all? Good morning. You can, thank you. So I'm going to take you through the aviation business. And before I get started, let me just give you a quick perspective of this show. I think that to a person at the show, this year feels much more comfortable than last year did, you know, where we came out of a world where we were looking at, you know, somewhere between 1.5% and 2% contraction in the demand for air travel in 2009 to a world now where the forecasted growth rate for 2010 is close to 7%. And so with that thawing, if you will, you're seeing a return of orders. You're seeing just a renewed confidence in demand for air traffic. And as Norm said, you're really seeing it in two different worlds, one being the emerging countries and one being the established markets today, and I'll take you through that a little bit. And then I'll take you through where GE Aviation is positioned today in terms of our portfolio, and then what we see going forward in terms of some of the investment opportunities and investment decisions we're making in order to maintain the same strength of the portfolio that we have now and enjoy as we look out into the later portion of this decade. And that's really, really the story. So quickly, what's new since we got together at Paris? First of all, we're looking forward to entering revenue service with the 787 and the 747-8 with our brand new product, the GEnx. We'll finish up the certification efforts on those engines this summer, and then we'll be in service with both applications in 2011. As you all know, the end of last year, COMAC, which is launching a brand new narrow-body aircraft, the C919, selected CFM to power it. And we will launch LeapX, which is the next generation of technologies for CFM, on that airplane. Also in China, we announced a joint venture in commercial avionics, first commercial avionics joint venture in China's history with our systems business. And oh, by the way, before I get any further, I have some folks here that I want to introduce, and you should get to know if after this session's over with. Chip Blankenship runs the commercial business. Russ Sparks, military business. Brad Montier runs the business and general aviation business. And Lorraine runs the GE Systems business. So all the vice presidents of the P&Ls are here also to answer questions when I get stumped. The AVIC GE joint venture will also be featured on the C919, and that'll be the first application of the avionics suite. The intent of that business is to create a global avionics joint venture to go after the next generation of airplanes. The F-136 program, which we'll talk about on the Joint Strike Fighter, is actually ahead of schedule on its test plan. And our aviation services backlog is now grown out to about $58 billion on the commercial side. And we continue to look for opportunities to grow outside of engines. And I'll show you a couple of things that are going on that connect the systems business, connect the services business, and really take a look at what the digital space means to us as we go forward with opportunities and services. And so this is just what I talked about. If you look at the demand for air traffic, 2009, a contraction somewhere between 1.5% and 2%. 2010, again, back to a world of growth with forecasted at about 7% revenue passenger growth. Capacity during the same time up 5%. Good story. And a very stable backdrop with fuel. We're not seeing these huge variations in fuel prices up to $140 a barrel anymore, which is a good thing. Predictability is good. In terms of our positioning, over 24,000 commercial installed engines, almost 24,500, almost 26,700 military. We expect this year to achieve 4,000 shop visits on our equipment worldwide. Our military business continues to be strong, and it's an imperative that we continue to support the warfighter. And you'll see how important that is to the warfighter when you see the amount of equipment in the Gulf that is powered by us. And finally, and probably most importantly, I'm going to take you through a number of growth opportunities, including COMAC with LEAP, the new systems joint venture, GE38, a number of opportunities for us to look at the next generation of engines and how we take the current suite of technologies that are in development and position ourselves to have as strong a portfolio next decade as we do right now. I've shown a chart very similar to this for the last 2 years, and I promise this will be the last year I bring it in here, but as we head out of this cycle, I wanted to just give you some perspective on where our positioning was relative to the totality of the fleet of commercial aircraft in service. So on the left-hand side of this chart, we've divided up the commercial airplanes in the world into three categories: the least fuel efficient, which represents the lower 15%, the moderately fuel efficient that continue in service and have redeployment and second lives, as Norm talked about, and then the most efficient, which are the top 50%. On the right side of the chart shows our penetration in terms of GE and CFM and how much of each of those we power. So, for example, we only power 216 airplanes in the lowest 15%, whereas we power almost 58% of those that are redeployment candidates and 73% of the most efficient aircraft in the world. If you take a look at since the additions to this total fleet since Paris, in the retirement candidates, 452 additional aircraft have been retired, whereas 59 came back into service in the redeployment candidates as we expected, and we added another 1,200 aircraft total in the most efficient. So the point here is that GE and CFM are very, very well positioned in terms of which aircraft we power now and in the future, and what the revenue streams in the services side of the business will look like as a result of the portfolio as it exists today. Now, if you take a look at the regional traffic growth and kind of break it down into the emerging versus Europe and U.S., the chart on the right kind of shows you the difference. This is Norm's comment that if you take a look at the emerging markets, it's really about a 2 multiple on GDP in terms of the rate of growth, whereas you see in Europe and the U.S., it's about half of that, maybe a little less. The important point here is that the trajectory is the same on all regions, in that everyone is showing positive recovery, whether it be Europe, the United States, or the emerging markets, certainly fueled by the rate of change in the emerging markets, but all markets showing positive growth versus where we were in 2008 and 2009. If you look at our positioning on the right-hand side in each one of these markets, whether it be the fleets in service or our aircraft backlog, we're very happy with how we're positioned in the emerging markets as well as the existing markets, over 50% of the fleets in service today, and also a pretty good backlog. And so now that kind of summarizes how I think of the marketplace that we live in, a market that's coming out of this trough, seeing positive recovery, GE CFM very well positioned in terms of the products we power now, probably for the next decade, and faced with some decisions relative to what we're going to invest in the future, both on narrow bodies, you'll see that in regionals and the systems business, which we can take you through now. So here's a 3-year outlook of the business. Revenue up 6% over the last 3 years, and op profit up 10. Quick look at the first half results. Revenue at 8.4, op profit at 1.7. Commercial engines and services deliveries are a little light relative to the first half of 2009, about 5%. Spares rate growth is, we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, but if you take out the AVL distribution deals we did in 2009, we've actually seen some lift in spare parts in the first half of 2010, somewhere around 2%. As the demand for air travel continues to recover, we expect to see that to continue to grow in the second half of the year. Military delivery is up slightly versus 2009 and spare parts flat. 2009 was a big year for us in terms of considering to continuing to simplify and consolidate our operations, particularly Lorraine's operation and systems, as well as our services and our new make operations. And we did a lot of work on working capital in 2009 and actually improved the working capital performance of the business by about 50%, took out about $1 billion of working capital year over year, and reduced our indirect spend by about 17%. So because we have opportunity to take a single look at our supply chain as well as our sourcing across all of these various businesses, we can look for inventory efficiencies, we can look for efficiencies in our back rooms, we can look for efficiencies in our overhead, and we continue to push very, very hard on finding the capital efficiencies and making sure we've got good first-time yield in this business. And in addition to that, as we take a look at Lorraine's business and really understand what the future is in terms of a Tier 1 integrator, we look at the different assets that are in that business and make determinations on what we want to do with them. And since 2008 through this year, we've actually moved 10 sites, either sold or closed since 2008, which resulted in an 8% reduction in our headcount since year-end 2008 worldwide. So the portfolio kind of looks like this. In 2009 revenues, the commercial engine portfolio of about $4.1 billion. Services generated off of that portfolio at about $7.1. Military engine and service business at about $4.2. The systems business at $2.9. And business and general aviation, which is a small piece of the portfolio that we'd like to grow, at about $400 million. You've all seen a chart similar to this in many presentations, which kind of goes through the commercial engine life cycle. But I put it in here to give you a perspective on the portfolio of products that represent GE as we speak. So I'm going to pick a couple of examples here. If you take a look at the CF6-powered 767, which is just about at the end of its production life, but hasn't really even reached its peak in terms of spare parts capability and the amount of service revenue we'll get out of it. We just took an order for three of those at this show from Azerbaijan, CF6-powered 767s. Now, contrast that world where we're really getting to the point where it's hitting its sweet spot in services. We're a world where we're just now entering service in the 787s with a GEnx in 2011 and just beginning to see the benefits of that installed base grow over time, over 1,300 orders over the next 5 years. So a great portfolio, very well positioned for growth, both in terms of parts and services as well as new engines. And it does represent the backbone of this business for the next 10 plus years. In terms of production forecast shown on the left, we expect to deliver about 1,733 commercial engines this year. That'll grow over the next current year plus three to almost 2,100 engines commercially. Our installed base will grow from 24,400 to 29,000. If you take a look at the bottom of this chart, it shows the backlog in years of production on every one of our product lines. So, for example, on the A380, which is the GP7000 on the far right, we have 7 years of backlog in production on order. GEnxs, we have 5 years of production backlog on order. And CF34 at two, and you can read the rest of the numbers. The right-hand side of this chart shows you the services and the shop visit forecast. So we expect to be at 4,000-plus shop visits this year, growing to 121 by the end of 2013. The services backlog during that period will grow from $58 billion up to $63 billion in service contracts. So a nice, strong services stream, a very strong production stream to continue to put those engines in the fleet and allow that service stream to continue to grow. GEnx, which we talked about a little bit, currently, 62% win rate on the 787. We are the preferred power on the 787 airplane, sole source on the 747, both of which will enter service in 2011. And just a huge technology step for us, and I'll show you how this becomes the corner point for the technology suite that we need to do LeapX, to do the next generation regionals, to do a business and general aviation play, all of which really capitalizes on the investments we made in the GEnx technology over the last 3 to 5 years. The order book is shown on the right, and I put it in comparison to the G90 launch, so you get some perspective on just the difference between how fast this program is moving forward. We have a little over 1,300 engines in the backlog on the GEnx between the 7.4 and the 7.8, and compare that to the G90. The scale there is entry into service plus 1 year, entry into service plus 2 years, to give you such just a reflection on the ramp rate of order books. So for the GE90, after 5 years of entry into service, we were shipping total, cum, about 200 engines. Compare that to the same five-year period in which on the GEnx we're running at over 1,300 engines in that same period of time. So a much faster production ramp rate, which is good. It drives productivity. It drives entitlement, drives us down the learning curves as we have that much volume to ship every year. Our goal on this program is to maintain a 2% fuel burn advantage over the competition, quite frankly. And so all of our investments are targeted at making sure that when we go to market with a differentiation on fuel burn, and that creates the value proposition we need to make sure that we get the right price out of this technology. China, which we talked about, there's Lorraine on the left-hand side of this chart with Chairman Zhang and the the signing of the joint venture between AVIC and GE to create the first global commercial aviation joint venture. That joint venture is in place to compete worldwide on the next generation of airplanes, Embraer, Bombardier, Boeing, Airbus, you name it. Our goal is to become an avionics player across the world, and we're going to start with a suite of products that we'll offer on the C919. The airplane, the C919, has a number of firsts for us, and it's worth noting. It does give us the opportunity to launch in CFM the next generation of technologies through LeapX. It gives us a chance to create this joint venture in avionics and launch the joint venture on a suite of avionics technologies on the C919. And finally, we have a joint venture with Safran, like CFM, in nacelles and thrust reversers, which we created a year ago at the air show we finally signed, and now its first application will be here on the C919 also. So a big platform for CFM and for GE and for the joint venture. Just a note on CFM, you know, the success of this franchise is extraordinary. Established in 1974 and now, 25 years later, 500 million hours in the air. This really represents the most successful engine company in the world. And now the full resources of GE as well as Safran in France are dedicated to creating the next generation of products to continue this run. And that starts with LeapX. And LeapX will start with the C919 and be an available suite of technologies and products for any decisions Airbus and Boeing want to make on their narrow bodies. I've told you about how LeapX starts with a high technology core. That becomes the heart of the engine. If the core of the engine doesn't have the most advanced technology in the world in it, all the architectural designs in the world can't make up for the efficiencies associated with the engine. We started E-Core probably 3 years ago based on the GENX technology suite. We've now dedicated it and committed it to the LeapX product line for the C919. We'll commit that fleet of technologies to the next generation of the CF34 for the regional market. We'll take the same set of technologies and commit it to the business and general aviation market for our next generation business and general aviation product. And finally, we'll take the same E-Core technologies and grow them and get them ready for the replacement of the 777-300ER engine. And we'll start that investment at the same time. So this set of technologies that represent this core become the backbone stemming from the GENX for a whole set of product portfolio decisions we're going to make over the next 3 to 5 years and a set of investments to get us ready for decisions on the re-engining or the next generation narrow body at Boeing and Airbus, on regionals and decision that's going to be made by Embraer on what they're going to do with the next generation Embraer 190-175 product, an opportunity for big business jets from Bombardier and Gulfstream, and finally for decisions that we're going to make in the 777 space going forward towards the middle to the end of this decade in the teens. So in the business and aviation system, I want you to think about this really as three engine plays. One is this large business jet engine, which takes the E-Core technology and drives it into a product we call TechX. The light business jets, which is the joint venture we've done with Honda, enters service in 2012 on the Honda jet. And finally, the turboprop business, which is the business we bought in Czechoslovakia a few years ago called Walter, which we have now built out, created a technology suite of GE Aviation into that product and have a good multi-generational product plan in the 1,000 shaft horsepower range. First application, agricultural application at Thrush, we won last year, and we continue to look at that turboprop business with interest. In addition to that, within business aviation, adding the systems piece to where we can go to the smaller airplane manufacturers and bring to them an entire suite of solutions in Lorraine's business and systems, as well as in Brad's engines. So it's a nice portfolio for us. We're organized around it, and we think we have the technology to be competitive going forward. So, you know, we look at this business as, you know, towards the latter half of this decade, the teens, of being $1 billion revenue a year business, all in. So something we're very interested in growing. Military positioning, we talked about this a little earlier, 26,700 engines currently. In theater, very high dependency on CFM and GE power, whether it be the fighter attackers, the helicopters, bombers, or even the surface vessels. We're very proud of our performance in theater as well as our position with the military. The strength of this position allows us to make investments in the next generation of heavy lift helicopters, the GE-38, which I'll show you on the next page. And it also fuels our, quite frankly, our stance on the Joint Strike Fighter and the need for a competitive position on engines for such a big program in the government over the next 30 years. So let me start with the GE-38, which is the heavy lift helicopter market. We won the Chinook 53K contract, about a $2 billion revenue opportunity. The total segment of these heavy lifts could be as much as $15 billion all in. It's a great engine. It's on test now. We have two engines on test this year. We'll actually fly it for the first time in 2012. It'll deliver somewhere between 10 and 20% lower fuel consumption than its competition. And the life cycle cost advantage of this particular product will be somewhere between 50 and 80%. So it's a really nice addition to our rotorcraft family as we look into the next decade. And finally, the Joint Strike Fighter. You know, this is the biggest game in town for us, quite frankly, in military. Represents a $100 billion engine opportunity. 30 years, it replaces F-15s, F-16s, F-18s, and F-14s in the fleet. We'll have six engines on test this year. Those engines will continue their testing and readiness for the first flight in 2011, and then we release the production version of the engine in 2012. Now, let me take a minute and talk about the Joint Strike Fighter and the case for competition. This chart is based on the F-16. This is all historical data. It's in the public record. But I want to give you a perspective on what it means to have a competitive engine program on a fighter of the magnitude of the Joint Strike Fighter. The chart in the upper left shows the average price of the engines before and after GE was put under wing on the F-16 as a competitor to the existing engine. The difference in price is close to 30%. The GAO has estimated that it's 26% on the F-16, and if you take that number and conservatively look at it over a $100 billion engine buy, that's a save of over $20 billion over the life of the program on the subsystems of the engines, just due to the fact that every year you create a competitive environment in which both of us have to come in with a sealed bid, and we get volume in our shops based on the merits of our performance, both in terms of price as well as terms of capability. The bottom left is a volume chart that shows how many aircraft were sold on the F-16 throughout the program from 76 through 2010. The inflection point that you see occurs where the competitive engine became available for the F-16. The number of international customers went up drastically when they were given a choice of two engines. Why? Because many of the international customers fly GE product today and were interested in flying GE product in the next generation. So the competition on the engines not only drives down the unit price of the engine relative to the overall program, it actually increases the volume of sales of the whole program because more customers are favorably looking at the opportunity to compete the engines and also to choose the engine manufacturer that they feel has the better performance based on the merits of their product. And finally, if you look at the performance of the airplane over the life of the F-16, on the right-hand side of this chart, it gives you some indication of how hard you have to work to differentiate your engine to make sure that you get the volume over the time. So the thrust of the engines is actually up 30% on the F-16 from the beginning of the program. The amount of reductions in aircraft stalls, which is a really big deal for a pilot in a fighter jet, are down 10x. The engine removals, unscheduled, were improved by 2x. The maintenance activities were reduced by two-thirds in terms of time between overhauls, and the number of hull losses or aircraft losses due to engine cause, we're down 2x. So when you have to compete every year, it drives two behaviors. It drives an investment in innovation so that you can differentiate the product based on its performance, and it drives an investment in productivity so you can differentiate the product on price. Year over year over year over year. Now, the GAO indicates that those two elements will result in somewhere north of $20 billion of savings if the exact same competition is allowed to play out on the Joint Strike Fighter. And that becomes the basis for the argument in Congress on why they set the program up 15 years to put competitive engines in place and want to maintain that competition now as they move forward towards production readiness by 2012. The United States has already spent $3 billion on this program. We'll have six engines operating at the end of this year, and we're 2 years away. We're 1 year away from flying it and 1 year away from producing it in production. And hence, that's the dialogue that sits in the background between the short-term savings versus the continuation of the investment in order to reap this type of benefit over the next 30 years of the program. Okay? Okay, aviation systems. A business that we bought from Smith's, legacy was really as a component supplier in avionics, mechanical systems, and electrical power, as well as accessories, engines, accessories. $2.9 billion, the majority of which was components. Lorraine and her team have positioned this business terrifically, quite frankly, for tier one capability. $1 million a ship set on the 787, $1 million on the 350, $1.5 million on the 380s, on all the Joint Strike Fighters between 1.6 and 1.8, and on the new Gulfstream 650, almost $500,000 in aircraft. Since Paris, we just talked about the C919, which gives us an entire avionics suite as well as the nacelle and thrust reverser package through the Nexcel joint venture. And Lorraine and her team have also won the Augusta Westling 139, the health monitoring or health usage and monitoring system called the HUMS, which is a very sophisticated prognostic system that allows us to take digital data and use it in a way that really improves the efficiency of the helicopter and becomes, quite frankly, the backbone for us taking a look at prognostic data solutions as a world that we want to grow out in terms of intelligence solutions going forward, not only in Lorraine's business, but also in the engine business. And so this represents this customer solution space that we're playing with. The left-hand side represents the intelligence services. We actually have 12 operating iPod applications, and we'll have it up to 30 by the end of this year. This is real-time access to critical fleet data for every customer, whether it be maintenance data, whether it be where their engines are in an overhaul cycle, or whether it be what's going on with their fleet as it's flying. It's available to all of the customers by hand. It allows them to not only manage the operating efficiencies of decisions they have to make in overhaul to make sure that they can turn the engines on time, but we can push all kinds of operational information in terms of what prognostics and diagnostics we're seeing on the engines as they fly, and what activities in maintenance they should schedule to ensure that they continue to have good, reliable service of the engines. The middle is a fuel and carbon management program. We bought a small business last year called BMB, which was a consulting firm. From that, we're learning a lot about how efficiencies play out within an airline operation. As an engine manufacturer, we have, of course, the information on the engine, but this broadens that space to us literally buying a consulting firm that was hired by the customer for the sole purpose of evaluating efficiency opportunities and productivity opportunities. The amount of learning relative to our next generation products, both in Lorraine's business and in the engines business, is huge. And for a small purchase, this is going to build itself out to be a nice customer solution space for us going forward. And finally, air traffic management, air traffic control. Between the position we have on the flight management systems today through the systems business, and the purchase of Navaris, which is a company that creates approaches, performance-based navigation approaches, which actually are the software that allow you to actually fly these sophisticated approaches into different cities, and with those approaches save a lot of money. 8 to 10% on fuel, reduces emissions on landings and noise, and actually creates more capacity in the airport. So think of a world today where an airplane is either circled or it steps down in its approach, very inefficient in terms of the air traffic control, to a world where you can have a continuous descent approach that starts from climb and just continues itself right down to the runway, reduces the time, reduces the backlog, and reduces fuel and emissions at the airport and improves capacity. So Navris was a purchase we made last year to teach us performance-based navigation and to understand how that fits with our equipment in the FMS, the flight management system, better, and really becomes, quite frankly, the suite of technologies together that will be in the C919. Will be the first place that both of these get combined and put into service together. So all of that together adds up to a set of platform investments that cover the entire portfolio, whether it be the LeapX for C919 and the re-engining, or the new airplanes from Boeing and Airbus, whether it be the G38 on the heavy lift helicopters, whether it be the GNX, which we finish up the investment and go into service and maintain 2 points of fuel burn advantage on that, whether it be TechX for the next generation of regional airplanes, or whether it be the replacement for the GE90 when the 777-300ER is ready to look at its renewal, which is the GE9X, all of which are a big platform of investments in addition to the systems world. New opportunities, new segments, very much new product launches, and with that is, for us, an opportunity to actually increase our annual R&D NPI spend as well as launch spend from about $1 billion a year in 2010 to somewhere between $1.3 billion to $1.5 billion, which is what we're looking at. And that'll vary depending on the trajectory of these developments, which depends on when they go to market and how much we have to spend. So here at Farnborough, just to give you a perspective on all the announcements, engine orders, about $8.2 billion. Services opportunities at somewhere north of $6 billion. Some keys from yesterday, Emirates, $3 billion on the 777 order, $4.8 billion on the A380 order for us, engines and services. Two critical orders in China at Air China and at China Eastern worth a total of $1.2 billion for the CFM family, that's services and engines. Flybe, which just finished up yesterday evening with an Embraer 175, 175s, 400 and almost $490 million for us with services. And we have two announcements that we can't tell you who they are because I promised I wouldn't be in front of the two airlines that are going to announce them today and tomorrow, but you should see another $1 billion CF6 order for services and another $2 billion CFM order for engines and services that occur between today and Thursday. So a very nice show and a very nice order book across the board. So that's it for now, and then we'll take questions, but I kind of want you guys to think about this business as one that's positioned very well with its current portfolio. We are definitely the preferred engine and service partner in the industry today. We've already made some investments to make sure that we secure that in the future, but there are more to come. We're winning in today's environment. We have to make investments in new platforms to maintain that exact same position as we look downstream in this world. And that should allow us to secure our future for, quite frankly, for decades to come. Okay? All right, so where's Norm? Why don't you come up with me, Norm, and then we'll start the question and answer.